I'm convinced that meeting the parents often happens over a meal, so you have something to stick in your mouth besides your foot. But sometimes that's just not enough. When meeting my parents, my boyfriend, being a chef, offered to make the meal. My mother resisted this arrangement at first. After all, it's not proper to have a guest do all the work. I insisted that cooking isn't a chore for Marcos. It's his passion, and it makes him happy to see people eat and enjoy. She finally gave in to the idea. I had successfully saved him from having to stomach some jello-based thing that rural Midwesterners try to pass off as salad. But then there was the question of who should be invited to this momentous occasion. A few weeks earlier, my family had gathered together for Mother's Day. I brought an assortment of homemade mini cheesecakes, plain chocolate chip, raspberry, and pecan. My brother tossed me a compliment over my improved culinary skills. I smiled and declared, "I'm dating a chef." And then the crickets started chirping while everyone continued stuffing their faces with cheesecake. I think they took my divorce harder than I did. And they did not know what to do with this new situation. With that in mind, I declined having my two older married siblings and their 7 screaming children at this dinner, or supper, as they would call it. Growing up in small-town Sioux County, I'd often hear people say, "If you ain't Dutch, you ain't much." And Marcos is Mexican. I figured he was in for enough of a culture shock. I'd spare him some family drama. On the night of this dinner at my parents' house, Marcos appointed me as his sous chef and put me to work making a raspberry vinaigrette in my new food processor, one of those kitchen gadgets my mom doesn't own. It caught my dad's attention. I've never seen him so interested in anything happening in the kitchen besides eating. Usually when my family gathers, the men sit in the living room talking about business and politics over the hum of football or Fox News on the TV, while the women scurry around the kitchen handling hot pots and pans. With Marcos in the kitchen, cooking became an inclusive family affair. I had braced myself for this evening to be painfully awkward. Not only was Marcos the first man I'd brought home to meet my parents post-divorce, he was also, as far as I know, the first person of color to ever sit at their table. There were a couple Canadians, but they don't count. So things were going great, right up until the moment dinner was served. That's when my dad pulled out his chair at the kitchen table and said, "Where are the big hats?" And my mom said, "You don't always need them." I could have died. At this point, I should have jumped in and said, "This isn't a Mexican restaurant." But I stood there in stunned silence, really wishing for some cheesecake. Marcos, that beautiful man, didn't seem to notice. He was too busy plating the food. Cedar plank salmon, smothered in hollandaise sauce with a side of rice and grilled zucchini. Not a burrito in sight. 4 days later, I finally asked Marcos if he'd heard that exchange between my parents. And he did. He just chalked it up as one of those bad dad jokes. I just wish they could have looked past his brown skin and sombreros to see what I see. We are more alike than different. But bridging the divide over race, ethnicity, and culture can't be done in one night, so we do it one meal at a time. If I'm being honest, much of this is new to me too. I've traveled abroad and experienced other cultures, but the fact remains that there was only one Hispanic boy in my high school class, and even he had a Dutch Van something surname. So when I met Marcos's parents 2 weeks earlier, I was filled with fear and fascination. Fear, mostly because, according to him, he has the best mom in the world, and she's like a freaking saint. Growing up, he'd see her come home from work and make dinner from a box, mac and cheese, frozen pizza, chicken nuggets, anything that would cook fast so she could get to her second job. But she wouldn't eat. And it wasn't because of the mystery meat in those chicken nuggets. She often went hungry to feed her three boys. Now, even though both of them work odd hours in restaurants, he tries to make it over to her apartment at least once a week, just to sit at the kitchen table and talk over coffee. He wants to get her name, Hilda, tattooed on his arm for everyone to see. If she didn't like me, I was toast. But upon meeting her, she called me Bonita, which means beautiful in Spanish, and she gave me a big hug, even though Marcos told her not to do that, because this is the Midwest, he said, not Mexico. With his stepdad at the wheel, we drove over to South Omaha's 24th Street, also known as La Plaza de la Raza, the gathering place for the races or for the people, depending on translation. The area was once known as Magic City because of its rapid growth in the late 1800s. When the stockyards opened, thousands of immigrants moved in. Today, 24th Street is lined with Latino-owned businesses. Around corners, murals capture the culture and heritage of the latest wave of immigrants, as well as earlier Poles, Lithuanians, and Croatians. Outside of El Dorado Restaurante Mexicano, two men plated and packaged tacos al pastor under a tent. One fried the corn tortillas, the other used a large knife to cut marinated meat from the trompo, a vertical rotisserie stacked with thin sliced pork topped with pineapple. The trompo slowly spun in front of an open flame. Juices dripped down the searing mound of meat. The taquero caught the shavings in warm, crisp corn tortillas. The other cook finished them off with a sprinkle of chopped onions and cilantro, offering salsa on the side. The way I used to make tacos involved a microwaved flour tortilla, two slices of Velveeta, and tavern, which in my mother's kitchen meant ground beef smothered in ketchup, a squirt of mustard, some brown sugar, and a dash of pepper. I would say that's a tavern wrap, at best. Marcos had taken me to the authentic taco hut outside the restaurant once before, and we got our food to go. This time, though, we sat down inside. The server took us to a corner booth where I could see that I was the only white person in the restaurant. His mom kept talking to him and his stepdad in Spanish, and I couldn't help but feel a little left out. I heard pollo and got excited because 4 years of high school Spanish classes taught me that's chicken. At least then I knew she was talking about the menu and not me, unless she thought I was a chicken, which was entirely possible at that point. After placing our orders, mine in English, theirs in Spanish, we got to know each other over the sound of a live mariachi band playing in the background. And yes, they were wearing big hats. Once the server arrived with la lengua sopas, all my insecurities fell away. I sunk my teeth into the crispy corn cakes, tasting beef tongue for the first time. Then I sat back and took a sip of horchata, savoring how food can bring us together, even when we feel far apart. I think my dad would have liked it, with or without the sombreros. Thank you.
I'm Ellie Carson, and I shared my story at Ode's Garden Party in the summer. The special storytelling event was supported by the Siouxland District Health Department's Worksite Garden Program, which encourages employees to grow fresh fruits and vegetables where they work. Join us on Wednesdays to hear more. Next week,
Richard's mom, Betsy, was a high-energy woman with an unforgettable flair for the dramatic.
Ode is a storytelling series where community members tell true stories on stage to promote positive impact through empathy. It's produced by Siouxland Public Media. Our next show is 7 p.m. Friday, February 2 at ISU Design West in downtown Sioux City. We'll be celebrating Ode's second anniversary. The theme is risk. Tickets are available at kwit.org. You can listen to past stories online and learn more about Ode on Facebook. The music you're hearing was played live by Devin Cadwell at the Garden Party. For Siouxland Public Media, I'm Ellie Carson.
Arise, young soul, so you can see what you want to someday be. Instead of wishing that you could face your fears, unwrap the tears that you cry, take back the breath that you sigh. It is not lost. consider the cost. Don't consider the cost. Mafia stuck at our heels. So let's fly from this sinking ship before it keels. I'll swim to the shore, being crushed by the waves. I'll grab your hand so you don't float away. We'll wash up to some weary deserted place. Don't count me out just yet, out just yet, out just yet.